Now here we go.
Most people really don't believe me. I know that. I live with that every day of my life. I've been pretty well tuned out by the media. If anything is remembered of me, I guess in the general world, what they remember is, haha, rectal probe, or he's a disturbed man, he's crazy, or something like that. But the truth is, I am not crazy. This is about emotions and feelings more powerful than human beings experience. It's about living and facing such experiences, and it is hard. It is real hard.
Bad things have happened to people from my childhood who I returned to meet again. I think I was traumatized in early childhood, and I don't think I'm alone. I think the whole neighborhood was bruised as if an invisible fist had come.
And also, I want to go home.
I don't think that I did it. I don't know what I did exactly connected with this in terms of intelligence work.
I can't get that face out of my head.
Apparently nothing. I can't remember anything at all. Not even a snatch of anything.
Really?
You will not live if you join the CIA. But I am a very conventional person. I was not able to control what happened. As you're undoubtedly aware, there's a whole school of thought in our world that they're evil. And they wouldn't disagree with that for a minute. Dark side and evil are complicated issues. We make the dark side evil by the way we deal with it, and the grays will test you and test you and test you. The more you work with the dark side, the more successful you are, the darker they get. Until you find the only thing is surrender.
Because I cannot do a thing about this. I don't even want to look up at this.
The only thing is surrender.
Can we help you stop screaming? Can we help you stop screaming?
Hello, this is Jason Horsley. This is the final Crucial Fictions audio. I'm sitting in a park in Helsinki, faking Cockney accent, don't ask me why. Just to not be in character, if possible. I'm going to refer to some notes that I made in the hope of being able to tie together some thoughts and threads that I've had since I came off the Devoshana retreat and just in time for the last installment of the Crucial Fictions Prisoner of Infinity Whitley's Game series. The written material, of course, was already done, but the audios have not been done. And although I had a conversation with Doug Lane yesterday, a very strange conversation in which I wasn't able to hear his voice mostly, so he was a silent interviewer through text. We didn't touch on anything remotely related to Whitley Strieber or trauma or any of the other main areas covered by this project. So this is what I'm doing in lieu of a conversation with someone. I'm having a conversation with myself while sitting in the sun in Helsinki. I actually just had a one-to-one with Dave O'Shana, so I'm not entirely sure if this is the right time to do this or not. Certainly in terms of my energy, my composure, my feeling of well-being, it would seem to be a very good time for it, but in terms of focusing on this particular subject matter, perhaps not so much so. However, Whitley did come up on one occasion during the one-to-one. I mentioned him because Dave was talking about how, because I hadn't got what I needed from my parents, the kind of loving, secure connection and the support and nourishment, emotional and energetic, that I needed from my parents, that in adulthood I'd gone looking for another parent, or parents, plural, most obviously in terms of looking for a teacher, mentor, guru, a sorcerer, a shaman, and so forth, which I began consciously, at least in my very early 20s. Well, actually, Dave was talking about in those formative years when I'd been experiencing a kind of abandonment or neglect, and like reached out for replacement parents, or can't remember exactly how he put it, but he said that they hadn't appeared, and I said, unlike for Whitley. Who, of course, according to his own accounts, and as covered in the Prisoner of Infinity material, in the midst of a very traumatic childhood experience or series of experiences, he had contact with the visitors, and they intervened and rescued him, and apparently provided him with the parenting that he wasn't getting elsewhere. So whether or not that will be a continued theme throughout this audio, I don't know, but I think it is. It's definitely a very central subject of the Prisoner of Infinity piece, and it's equally central in my own life path, my own seemingly ceaseless search for an external presence to support, to nurture, to validate, and to love me. Well, one thing is said at the end of chapter 12, I don't have it in front of me because I can't read it, but it is that it was that about how we all create our own fictions, and that this piece itself was my fiction, and that if you, the reader, have believed it, then you haven't understood it. Well, I would add to that that if you have understood it, then you have not experienced it. And that experience is fundamental, like the bread of life. And unless we fully consume that bread, we can't even begin to digest it, and until we digest it, we can't understand it. It's only when we've fully broken it down and absorbed it that we understand it. And belief is just not even part of that. that sequence or that process. Belief is entirely superfluous to it. But understanding is, although it's not superfluous, it's not necessary to the process. It's more the end result of it. Only when we fully experience reality can we even begin to understand it, rather than thinking that we need to understand it to experience it. The Tao that can be spoken is not the Tao. You can't step in the same river twice. I'm going to have to pause now, because unfortunately I've been thinking that I'll keep this moving as quickly as I can, because I feel that if I stop talking, I will stop indefinitely. And I don't want there to be large pauses, but of course I can always edit that. I just didn't want to have to edit it. So I'm just going to slow down. I'm going to slow down, because ironically, the meaning of what I'm trying to convey here is that the meaning is not in the words, but in the expression. The verbal expression is not just the expression of thought or expression of language, but the expression of the total body and even of the soul, the psyche. So, making sense is not enough. Coherence is not enough. Intellectual meaning is not enough. Experience is a moment-to-moment thing. What is experiential is what is happening in the moment. The memory is not experience. The past is not experience. One can remember experiences that happened in the past, but the memory of them, or the act of remembering them itself, is not experience. It's once removed. Likewise, the future. Any thoughts or plans for the future are essentially unreal. The only thing that's real is the moment as it's being experienced. Now, the moment by definition is passing. The moment in which we observe ourselves experiencing the moment, that moment has already passed, and we're on to the next moment. It moves so fast that we can't actually record it scientifically. Then that begs the question, like, what kind of response are we left with? And the answer is, not very much. Not very much at all. What I'm attempting now is not easy, because I'm attempting to talk about how language is that wind, how deceptive language is, without being deceptive myself. So it may not even be possible what I'm attempting to do, but that seems somewhat fitting. I was like a challenge. Now I've lost my page. The wind blew my page away, and the words disappeared. Now they've reappeared again. It says here, either moving forward to meet the unknown or looking back at the known, which is no longer present but only in memory. So I'd say that this has been my experience since the retreat, that there's an option in every moment, and it's constantly renewed. Like, it doesn't matter how many times we fail to take this invitation, it comes again. Every moment is presenting us with this option, is inviting us to open to it and take a step forward to meet it, to step into the moment as it opens to us. through the moment, you could say, into reality. But the option that we generally take, at least which I've generally taken, is to look back at the moment as it's passed. It's a stepping back from the moment, as if to avoid it, and then the moment flies by, and then we look over our shoulders and watch it receding from us, with no doubt an element of regret or longing. One more moment has passed us by, but as if to console ourselves or recompense ourselves for that failing or that loss, we then study the moment. We describe it, we interpret it, we file it, we stack it up next to all the other moments that have passed us by, and like books on a bookshelf arranged in order of height, we ensure that that moment that we just missed fits very nicely with all the other moments in such a way that we feel reconciled or consoled with at least the knowledge that we know where that moment fits, and that that moment reinforces our sense of meaning, of continuity, that we are at least keeping track of all the moments. Now, that's really the only thing we get out of that is the feeling that we know something. We know what just happened. We know when it happened and where it fits with all the other moments. So we're basically bringing the moment into the known, into the what we imagine is known. In fact, we don't know at all. We've just become so habituated to this process, or this kind of subterfuge, or this way of hijacking the now and turning it into the then, into the past, that it gives us this reassuring sense of being on solid ground. It doesn't make us happy, doesn't make us complete, doesn't give us a deep sense of meaning, but it does give us this superficial sense of coherence, that things are rolling along and we are keeping score of everything. Okay, well, my next point written here is the ET versus the ET. So that's the enlightenment transmission versus the extraterrestrial. This is, although I don't talk about enlightenment in the piece, I think it is central, maybe even the central theme of the piece, which is that the truth is not out there, but in here. So the extraterrestrial is what comes from without, comes down to our realm, that invades or intrudes into it, that appears before us as something wonderful, something unknown, something otherworldly, and that turns our lives upside down, whether it abducts us, whether it lifts us up, rescues us, whether it burns down our house or sticks implants in our bodies. It's something that comes from the outside in. The enlightenment transmission, although it comes from outside of creation and enters into the creation, in that sense, it's as outside as can be. The way that I experience it, at least, but I do pretty sure it's the only way that it can be experienced, is as coming from the deepest part within me, the very center, the infinitesimal center of my being, extending outward through through all of the layers of my my being. It's an energetic being. It's body, it's soul, it's mind, it's heart, it's emotions, it's thoughts, it's intuition. My experience of myself, which is a sphere, I mean, any way you look at it, we are at the center of a sphere, because everything is equal. I mean, we extend outward equally in every direction, so that creates a sphere. Outward from the center, I mean, not from the surface of the body, otherwise that would just create a giant cosmic body or an infinite cosmic body shaped thing. But thinking about the center, which is a nowhere point, then the expansion or extension outward from that inner point must always be a sphere. And as it moves outward, as that consciousness, that awareness, that transmission moves outward through the layers, it moves me. It moves me to perceive. It's what causes me to perceive, but it also allows for a response to what I'm perceiving. I'm just babbling now. I'm just talking because I don't want to admit that I don't know what I'm talking about. Damn it. The real question is, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? I'm doing this because I know people follow along what I've been doing, and I do want to complete it, so I don't want to just leave it unfinished, because I don't know, I want to leave it unfinished because it's something that has life and value. I feel that it does have some resonance for people, and so I don't want to leave people unsatisfied, feeling that something is unresolved or unfinished. I think people, starting with myself, of course. So I do want to somehow tie it up, preferably in a bright red ribbon. If I have to tie it up with a piece of string, then so be it. This is that piece of string. We're never as eloquent as we would like, and the truth is that since this last retreat, I've become much less eloquent. I've been getting progressively less eloquent anyway over the past few years, because I'm recognizing that the voice that I've developed as a voice with authority and eloquence is not my authentic voice. And so letting go of that false or inauthentic voice means letting go of the skills that I've developed for self-expression, or supposed self-expression, for false self-expression. And yet here I am, I'm still talking, I'm still setting myself up to communicate verbally. So the enlightenment transmission can express through me, but only insofar as I get out of the way and let the pressure, very gentle pressure, nudge out the energy. It's like it's water that's flowing through down a very rocky mountain, and having to make its way through these very tightly lodged rocks and possibly dislodge them as it goes, and possibly not, possibly it's just a very thin trickle rather than a rushing stream that I would like, and where it's very halting movement and spurting and splashing rather than cascading out and through and down and into thirsty mouths, starting with my own. So she's very much about self-sufficiency and the need for it. Like, life cannot begin until we're fully self-sufficient. But to be self-sufficient is to be complete, and to be complete is to be enlightened. Like, that's the only meaning that word can have in order to be meaningful for me. That fits with my next note. Life begins with enlightenment. Pre-enlightenment is pre-birth. It's a form of gestation or half-life or even non-life, sheer existence, subsistence. A fetus dreams inside the womb, and those memories are false memories, they're incoherent fragments, but those fragments can eventually be pieced together to make a picture. And after we do that, after we piece together these incoherent dream fragments of our sleeping, subsistent life, half-life state, after we have enough fragments pieced together, however arbitrarily, we manage to convince ourselves that they do make a picture, and after that it becomes easier and easier to make the subsequent false memory fragments fit. And then we even begin to dream in such a way that we'll be consistent with that picture that we've created, until in the end it's impossible not for them not to fit. We no longer even have to try to make them fit. Everything just naturally fits together in a way that makes it absolutely convincing that we are living life, when in actual fact we have not yet been born, not fully. So yes, life cannot begin until we're complete, until we have entered into reality, until we have full access to the moment. Till that time, we're living in a compartment of the mind, creating fantasies and interacting with those imaginary characters and events. And it's all compensatory, it's all escapist entertainment, even though it may be quite horrific. We like horror movies, that's why, because we need something that really gets our adrenaline flowing and really gets our attention and echoes those early traumas in order to distract us from the pain and the anguish of being unborn, being trapped or caught between two states of being. So life pre-enlightenment is false memory syndrome. Sensing the falseness of our perceptions, we are drawn to and interrupted by alternate perceptions and ideas that make sense of the feeling of incoherence or falseness. So, insofar as more sensitive or soulful, whatever quality is that distinguishes those of us who have a more pressing or oppressive sense that something isn't right, that our perceptions are deceiving us, or what we tell ourselves about what we're perceiving is somehow wrong, or that the world is not right, or that things are not what they seem. All of these feelings of oppressors and even tormentors come down to this basic fact that our development was arrested or interrupted, and that the birth process was not completed. Physically, of course, it was, but energetically, it was interrupted. and by trauma. And seeking relief from the tension of that, the incongruency between what we're perceiving and how we're able to understand it or respond to it. Ah, the incongruency, I'm trapped in it right now. Just our inability to actually interact with the moment, to be in our bodies, that disembodiment, naturally leads us to seek answers, ways to understand that in order to relieve it, in order to fix it, in order to heal it. And naturally we're drawn to versions of reality, interpretations of reality that support that feeling, that account for it. So if we begin to believe, if we learn about information that indicates that there is a whole other reality behind this reality that involves aliens, shadow governments, conspiracies, spirits, demons, entities, ghosts of the dead, psychic powers, vampires, inorganic beings, time travelers, past lives, astrological influences, kundalini, you name it, the whole spectrum and gamut of New Age, occult, UFO, second matrix law, all of that seems like it's providing us with the tools to understand our predicament and even to find a way to weasel out of it. But the truth is the opposite. Truth is the opposite. We dug a hole. We found a hole to hide in when circumstances were so threatening to us that we wanted to hide and just find a safe place to not be seen, to be safe. And and because we're aware that we're in a hole and we want to know why, we start digging the hole deeper and going deeper and deeper down this rabbit hole, thinking that it's going to lead to Wonderland. And in a sense it does lead to a Wonderland of a dissociated state, but that Wonderland is not reality, and it's not an alternative to reality. It's simply a full and finally accomplished dissociation from reality. The only way actually to fully relieve the pressure and the tension of that of our state is to emerge from the hole. To actually stick our head out from the rabbit hole and risk that Elmer Fudd is going to blow our ears off, and come out wherever we are and see actually what's around us. That is the only way out. Aliens, shadow governments, conspiracies, spirits, demons, entities, ghosts of the dead, psychic powers, vampires, inorganic being, time travelers, past lives, astrological influences, kundalini.
There's a whole school of thought in our world that they're evil.
Truth is the opposite. Truth is the opposite.
We'll test you and test you and test you.
We dug a hole.
Billions of people who understand this.
And come out. Come out. Come out. Come out wherever we are.
And you see, anger never completely goes away. Never. Now here we go.
no resolution, no climax, no conclusion. Reality is not more extraordinary than our fictions, it is more ordinary. So ordinary it is incomprehensible to us.
I am not crazy.
It's a one use only map. It's a map for leaving the territory. It's a map, not a map for knowing or navigating the territory.
Bad things have happened to people.
Perception is happening.
I can't get that piece out of my head.
All we know is that it's happening.
I am a very conventional person.
The uncertainty then is that everything is uncertain.
Absolute morality. This is real life.
It's a feeling of being under absolute control.
All we have to do is relax as we prepare for contact.
Questions and memories.
Knowledge prevents experience of the unknown.
Anguished masters.
Less is more.
Questions and memories. Questions and memories.
The Tao that can be spoken is not the Tao.
Also, I want to go home.
So, this brings me full circle. Well, perhaps not full circle, but back to the main subject of Whitley Strieber. Like, why I was drawn to Whitley Strieber. Because, like Castaneda and many other writers, but particularly those two, I think, from what I read and because of my trajectory, I recognized him as being somebody who was deeper down the rabbit hole than I was. So I misidentified him and his story and that information as representing where I wanted to be. I wanted to follow Whitley down the rabbit hole. I wanted to have my own experiences of visitations and of awakenings and of abductions and of movements through time and space and of opening up of the chakras and of meeting enlightened masters in the middle of the night who are represent God in human form and all of the stuff that so many find so compelling about Strieber's story compelled me to follow that trail of crumbs. Perhaps not all the way in, but as far in as I got into the Strieber matrix, which is just one one room in the many-roomed mansion of the second matrix of which I'm talking, and trying to find my way out of that. Or finding my way out of that matrix rightly or wrongly, necessarily or not, I've engaged in marking the rooms, marking the doors, marking my progress out, like, I've wanted to map. I didn't correctly map my way in, so I feel like I need to map my way out, and that's helping me to find my way out. Perhaps, of course, by identifying those features that I didn't notice on the way in, even though I didn't recognize them for what they were, I'm now noticing them doubly, if you will. I'm noticing them for myself, and then I'm describing them for others, so they're doubly noted. And it's a one-use-only map. It's a map for leaving the territory. It's a map, not a map for knowing or navigating the territory. Because this is a territory that is made of thoughts, of dreams, of mind stuff, of fantasies, of delusions, of fears, of trauma, dissociated states, of imaginary friendships, of imaginary parents. It's a nightmare realm that has been rendered almost real through the skill and the diligence of one writer, of many writers. This is not just Strieber, this is something that's being done all over the world. I don't know what that woman screamed at, but it was quite a nicely timed scream. And myself included. So part of this process is an undoing of my own error, really, an undoing of error, a righting of wrongs, correcting of misassumptions and any misguidance that I've given to others. At least I hope that it will have that effect for others. Referring back to the notes now. Reality is not more extraordinary than our fictions, it is more ordinary. So ordinary it is incomprehensible to us. If like myself we have a feeling of unreality, if this feeling that what we're seeing is somehow not actually what's going on, that there's something we're missing, which I've always felt like I was trapped in a dream. And I mistakenly, I would say, associated that with the mundane nature of reality. And perhaps because of social reality is very much not it. And so that feeling of unreality was somewhat appeased by finding alternate realities or alternate interpretations of reality which were more dreamlike, more obviously dreamlike, more fantastic, more magical. That seemed paradoxically, conversely, that seemed to be more real, it seemed to more adequately represent my experience. And so over time, or maybe it was very early on, I don't know, but that sort of engendered in me, imprinted me with this idea that the reality was that the bigger things got and the more fantastic they got and the more dramatic and amazing things got, the closer I was getting to reality, and vice versa. And it does seem like a logical position, like the universe is infinitely large, so if we were to expand our awareness to encompass the whole universe, that would be very, very big, and everything would be happening, and God only knows what would be happening. But that's from the point of view of the ego, that's one part within that. Now, the only... Well, it's not even the alternative to that, because that is not a good alternative at all. That is just to become a prisoner of infinity. So the only real option is the inverse of that, and that is to, as we expand our awareness or allow it to expand, to encompass everything that is, the moment, we experience ourselves as the moment. We're also happening within the moment. We're not just this invisible witness or this passive bystander. We're also happening. We're also part of the happening of the moment. So there's no actual existing line between us, our inner perception or experience of the moment, and the moment that's happening around us. It's all happening. So then our point of view, you could say, is that of the universe, and to the universe, or to infinity, everything is very, very small. It is just these tiny infinitesimal details. So I think that pretty much says it, that the more attuned we become to reality, that the more ordinary everything begins to seem. And yet at the same time, it is extraordinary, but the extraordinariness is not in what's happening, but in the experience of being both present and not present at the same time. Experiences of dissolving into reality, although that's not putting it correctly either, because I don't experience myself as dissolving, but I don't think I can put it into words at this point. I think I'm going to have to just look at the notes again. The primary mystery is the one we recognize as unknowable, and so we skip over it. Okay, so that was what I was trying to get to. Now, if we ask ourselves, what do we know? Using logic, because logic is part of what we are too. There is only one answer. There's only one honest answer, and that is that we only know one thing. We only know that we exist in some form, that we are perceiving. It might sound like two things, but we know that we exist because we know that we're perceiving something. Something is perceiving. Perception is happening. There's various different ways that we can phrase it, but I think hopefully you get the gist that it's one thing. I am. Perception is. Now, and that sort of conversely, that one thing that we can know is incomprehensible to us. We know that it's happening, but we don't know how or why, what it consists of, when it began, when it will end. All we know is that it's happening, and that it's constantly changing. Each moment is different from the moment before. So anything we can say about this moment, we can't say about the next. And whatever we said about the last is no longer applies to the moment that we're in now. So the only certainty then is that everything is uncertain. Yet that primary mystery, which is also the bedrock of our existence and our experience, that unknowable question, who am I? What is this? What's going on? Is too much for us, because it's unknowable and because it encompasses absolutely everything. It throws everything into eternal uncertainty. There will never be an answer to that question. And so from a certain point of view, the ego that's struggling to survive and define itself in the world, that question is annihilating, and so it has to be bypassed. Like as children, I know I did, many of you did the same, I would contemplate infinity. I would lie awake and think about space going on forever, time continuing eternally. I still do, or I do again, more and more. But at a certain point I stopped thinking about that, because it was too unsettling, I think. Of course, because it didn't seem to be going anywhere. So, once we not admit defeat, but once we agree to ignore that question, I think what we do is that we look for lesser mysteries to seek after and to understand. We become addicted to the unknown and to making the unknown known. We look for knowable unknowns, but the more unknown the better, as long as they are still knowable. We must at all costs stay away from the unknowable, because that is utterly annihilating. It leaves nothing to be done. If we're face to face with the unknowable, what is there to do? There's nothing to do. On the other hand, if we're confronted by a series of unknowns, knowable unknowns, then we can stay busy for our whole lives, chasing after, hunting, catching, killing, framing, mounting these unknowns that we've come to know. And it feels like we're getting somewhere, but we're not. We're absolutely, totally not getting anywhere, because the universe is infinite, and no matter how many knowable unknowns we know, we come to know, there'll still be the unknowable at the end of it all. We'll still be faced with the exact same unknowable. Now, as I wrote that note, I realized that it was the very inverse of what Carlos Castaneda writes about, and that the sorcerers are empowered by the unknown, but they must always be careful to turn away from the unknowable, because it just depletes all their energy. And that a great part of the sorcerer's path is to learn to know the difference between the knowable unknown and the unknowable unknown. And I think that is very telling about the sorcerer's path and why Castaneda and Strieber have ended up in such a bad place, if they did, why they've wound up like in a corner scratching at the walls, trying to break through. Finally break through to whatever it is they think that they need to get to, not realizing that they've actually been running from something their whole lives. I've been running from it. We've all been running from it our whole lives. We've been running from the unknowable, infinite, eternal. And yet, the unknowable, infinite, eternal is everywhere. There's no escape from it. It is in each and every moment. It's actually the substance. And the essence of every moment. Every moment is unknowable, every moment is infinite, every moment is eternal. And we are that too. All there is to us that has any endurance is equally infinite, eternal, and unknowable. So, if we're to know ourselves, to truly know ourselves, then we can't turn away from the unknowable. We have to gaze into the abyss until we recognize, really see that it's gazing into us, and be swallowed up in that gaze like two souls in love, eternally in love. That's the conjugation, the conjunctio oppositorum. It is enlightenment, the soul and the body united in an instant. An instant that continues forever. And that's the only landing that is ever going to meet our expectations. That's the only alien that we are seeking consummation with, or communion with, is the alien other of our own souls. Do is relax as we prepare for contact. Preparing for contact means clearing a space. To bring that energy into expression, into existence, so that one becomes an opening from outside of space-time into manifestation of the material realm. This is the contact experience that one encounters the alien other only by becoming a conduit for it. One experiences the transmission by becoming an expression of it. There is no other way that I know of. This is the whole and entire purpose of life, of human existence, of any other kind of existence. Human beings who are ETs, who are carriers of the enlightenment transmission, are here with a mission to break the trance, the sleeping spell of being human, of being mortal, of being terrestrial beings, and awaken to the signal or the intelligent force that would become operational through this organism. This is not an evolutionary progress. This is not evolutionary progress. It might appear to be an extension or an expansion or a furthering of some agenda from a linear temporal perspective, but that is an illusion. Arg. Less is more. I'm hoping that in order to experience the unknown, unknowing is necessary. One can only experience what one is like. Knowledge prevents experience of the unknown. Knowledge prevents direct experience of reality. This is a radical concept. This is an unthinkable idea. This goes against everything we have been trained and conditioned to believe. We are stuck on a dime. We're stuck. Come unstuck is to allow ourselves to be reduced. There is something that is When I speak from the body, what would the body say about any of this? What would the body say about any of this? It's all nonsense, that it's all meaningless mumbo jumbo, gibberish, just talk. the pure expression. Let me break open the crucial fiction of I, crucial fiction of identity. This is preparation for contact, for a clearer space, the forest of our bodies. We send up a signal to the heavens to let that higher intelligence know that we are here. Fuck. Shit. Crap. Why can't I speak? Because I want to. Can't speak because I want to. Can't speak right because the tools that I developed were developed for a specific purpose which no longer serves to further, never did serve to further that intelligence that my life is designed to be in service to. Well, perhaps the tools can serve that intelligence, but they weren't developed in order to do so. They were developed as a form of defense, as a form of fantasizing, as a means of escape, of hiding, of self-protection, keeping the world at a safe distance. So the tools either have to be relinquished or they have to be recalibrated, they have to be redesigned. To be understood, better understood, in order to know if they really are useful to us. The ability to create crucial fictions, the ability to spin surrogate realities that are all-inclusive and all-persuasive, the ability to shape our reality, predicated on a fundamental rejection of and a fleeing from reality. The creation is what we exist within, and it is so far beyond our comprehension, much less our control, that the idea of actually wanting to add to it in any way or change or alter it or create surrogates for it could only stem from a misapprehension of reality. So if our original premise is faulty, then all of the deductions and all of the conclusions that come after it will be correspondingly faulty, and increasingly so as we build faulty structures on top of faulty structures, and the edifice becomes ever more precarious and unstable. We're trying to build a tower to the heavens, but there's no way to reach the heavens by building anything. Rocket ships are not going to take us to paradise. We can't ascend through jet propulsion. We can't expand through flammable gas. We can't become more intelligent or aware by mutating and expanding our brains. We can't become more passionate by setting ourselves on fire. We can't actually direct our own unfolding. So we summon some outside force to do it for us, to tell us that this is how it's done. We summon the extraterrestrial, the alien, the other, the visitor, to engineer our evolution, to intervene, to traumatize us, to bring our awareness to the trauma. Is it working? Doesn't seem to be. It's like a book in which the lead character vanishes halfway through. All that's left are empty pages. No resolution, no climax, no conclusion, no explanation, nothing. Every sentence is unfinished at that point. And that opening of that hole that's created by the vanishing identity eats its way back through time till each and every sentence leading up to that point of self-erasure is also dissolved, slowly unravels until all the pages are empty, none of the sentences even began, much less ended. There is no book, there is no title, there is no story, there is no fiction. And then I'm alone, at the very center of infinity, gazing outward in every direction, filling the void with perception, unmoving, surrounded by motion. It's the most uneventful story ever told because everything happens at once. Heaven is a place where nothing never happens, not even for a moment. I want to wish Whitley well on his journey. May he find peace, may he find understanding, may he find some sort of resolution to his story, may he have whatever his heart desires, and so on and so forth, etc., etc. Amen.
Because I do know now, the science is perfectly clear. The science is perfectly clear. But the truth is, they're so far beyond civilization that they're not even in the same league as we are in that respect. They know absolute morality and they live by it. This is why they are willing to kick and to cherish. They want to be called the Greys. This is their idea. Because gray, of course, is a mixture of black and white. It's not divided into good guys versus bad guys. We're not dealing with some kind of Buck Rogers stuff here. This is real life. It's real complicated.
The word is about. There's something evolving.
This is real life.
Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution.
Well, the science is perfectly clear.
But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Are you strong enough? Can you take it? And the more you can take, the more they will dish out. I've lived with that all of my life.
The newspapers shout, a new style is growing.
It's a feeling of being under absolute control.
But it don't know if it's coming or going. There is fashion, there is fact. Some is good, some is bad. And the joke.
My being and my body, questions and memories, dark memories,
You have absolutely no right.
And I'll see you again.
You do have a right.
Yes, I've seen it before. Just a little bit of history.
I have an implant in my left ear. What does it do to me? My being and my body, questions and memories, dark memories.
Some people will dance if they don't know who's singing.
Sing that song to somebody else.
Why ask your head? It's your hips that are swinging. Life's for us to enjoy. Woman, man, girl and boy, feel the pain, feel the joy. The little bits of history repeat.
And yet, I would never for a moment turn away from these hard and distressed, anguished masters, the greats. Never would I turn away from them. Never would I turn away from them. Never would I turn away from them.
Who the hell is that? Is that somebody?
You have absolutely no right. We do have a right.
I don't think I like that. I don't think I like that.
What is about? There's something evolving.
You have absolutely no right.
Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving.
We do have a right.
They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
My being and my body are questions and memories, dark memories. Are you strong enough? Can you take it? I have an implant in my left ear. What does it do to me? And the more you can take, the more they can dish out. I've lived with that all of my life. Never would I turn away from it. My being. My body, questions, and memories, dark memories.
It's a feeling of being under absolute control. Sing that song to somebody else. Sing that song to somebody else. Here. You have to understand that. They are here.